Start the recording. Thank you. Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce Susan G. She's a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the big book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After she shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or about what she has shared. So please help me welcome Susan G., a compulsive overeater from LA. Yay.
Thank you, Pat, so much for that lovely introduction. And I suppose good afternoon, good evening. I don't think it's good morning for anybody who's here. As Pat said, my name is Susan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Westwood near the infamous UCLA, and that's probably what a lot of you have heard about. Welcome to the newcomers. And Jessica, thank you so much for asking me to speak. I always try and say yes, unless I literally just can't. I have been asked to speak at meetings or in the middle of the night, my time, and I do draw the line and say no to 2 and 3 in the morning. The earliest I'd probably do would be 5 a.m., but 2 and 3 is a little bit much. If you are new, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home, which that will probably maybe make you cringe like it did for me. But today, this is my home. I have found a place here with my nearest and dearest friends, and my heart has been opened to just so many experiences, things that I never ever thought were possible for me because I was morbidly obese for many, many years. I've got 23, almost 24 years of sobriety with my food and maintaining over 100-pound weight loss. And that is not because I'm a superhero. It's not because I'm special. It's because I've become one of many. I compare the way I ate to the way Bill Wilson of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the founders, together with Dr. Bob, drank. And as I'll tell you my story and show you my photos, you'll understand where I'm coming from. But I wanted to start because I know, you know, people come here and they think, well, I can speak for myself. I can just stop. I can just throw money at this. I can go on this diet here. I can get this needle in my bum here. I'll watch my language because I know we're being recorded. I can get a prescription from here. I can do whatever it is. I can take care of this. Just don't tell me I have to be a part of this group with the unsexiest name of all the A groups, Overeaters Anonymous. Spare me from this, please. And every time I went on a diet, absolutely work. But for a girl like me who has a spiritual malady, who needs a power greater than herself in her life to help her, I couldn't stay stopped past the well done, you're at maintenance. And in the back of the big book, there are 42 personal stories which help us identify. And there's one in there called My Chance to Live. And on page 316, and I'm just going to read it as is. It says, no one who drank as I did wakes up on the edge of the abyss one morning and says, things look pretty scary. I think I'd better stop drinking before I fall in. I was convinced I could go as far as I wanted and then climb back out when it wasn't fun anymore. The difference with food and alcohol, and I can't speak to vomiting or starving yourself because that hasn't been my experience. I understand there's a slight high at first from vomiting, no experience. But being fat, which I'll get into, was not fun. What happened was I found myself at the bottom of the canyon thinking I'd never see the sun again. I had to become really, really desperate, really, really desperate. I had to be out of all ideas. And it talks about in one of the chapters earlier on, more about alcoholism. I had to fully concede to my innermost self. And that is way, way deep down. It's not just that surface level of, oh, I'd like to look like that billboard. How did they get that? Call that doctor, 1-800, I'm there. And then it says, AA didn't pull me out of that hole. It gave me the tools to construct a ladder with the 12 steps. And that's what I have, these steps that are a design for living. They work when I'm happy, sad, mad, or glad. In crisis, on a sunny day, earthquakes, tornadoes, losses in families, divorces, marriages, anything. This is where I go. And so my friends have seen these pictures. Okay, why is that not coming up? One moment, please. Okay. You may have something different here in your settings that aren't letting me share. Let me try again. Oh, here we go. It was me. User error. Okay. So if you've seen them, you can go off for 5 minutes and tra-la-la your way because they haven't changed. So here I am at 250 pounds wearing a size 26 dress. I'm 5'7¼" and I'm going to cleat that quarter, keep on going to Pilates to keep me stretched out. And I gained and lost my weight many, many times. I would say between 8 and 10 times. Again, I let people put things, injections in my bum. I never researched anything. I would take pills if I could get them. I tried cocaine. I had my jaw wired shut. And in that time that my jaw was wired shut, I looked no different on the day I started to the day I had it taken out. Because if you are a drunk like me with food, even though I voluntarily went, I went there of my own, you know, I just decided it was a good idea. Somebody told me about it. And immediately when I left, I found somewhere to drive through and to get some cold stuff that you can drink every day and sustain 250 pounds for 3 months. So you can figure out the calories in that cold stuff and know where we're going from there. I came to my first meeting in 1982. And to say I recoiled as from a hot flame, as it talks about in the book, but with other behaviors, I thought it was just horrifying, not telling these people my business. I have no idea what they're talking about. So eventually in the late 90s, I just couldn't do it anymore. And I was actually really, really scared that 250 wouldn't be my starting point. So I'll get more into that when I speak. So this is what happens. This is what happens, you know, when you have really curly hair, then you want to straighten it, then you get older, then you make it blonder. This is what you do. I did a breast cancer walk for 3 days the year after I was sober with my two friends here who are now angels. Unfortunately, it got the better of them eventually. And then this is what it's like now. The picture on the left is taken, will be 5 years ago in October. I only know because my dad will be 85 and that was at his 80th. That outfit still fits. These were in New Jersey last year. Well, the middle one was in New Jersey last year at a wedding where it was so hot. I can't even describe to you what was going on. I mean, oh, I was sweating everywhere. And this was taken at my birthday a year ago. Then here is some fun and fellowship and friendship of all these people who you make along the way. Two people down on the right-hand side are family members. And here are some more people that you know. I have to add some new ones because I keep making new friends here. So what happened for me was I had been overweight my whole life. It was always an issue. It was just, I just don't know. And I learned to diet at a very, very young age with my mom, who was one of us. And it became this frothy emotional appeal, as it's talked about in Dr. Silkworth's chapter, The Doctor's Opinion. And so I was, if you don't eat this, you'll get that. If you don't eat this, I'll buy you that. And so I could keep it up for a little bit, but I couldn't keep it going because I'm powerless. I'm powerless without just a little bit of something else, without a spiritual and emotional rearrangement. So I was always that child who was dropped off at parties. She can't have this, she can't have that. So I learned how to help all the mummies in the kitchen clean up and how to sneak food very, very early on. Fast forward, I moved to America in 1982. And it is quite amusing. Before I came, there was something called the Beverly Hills diet. And it was all these different fruits and everything. On the day I flew here, it was pineapple day. So most people probably would eat a normal amount, but not if they're a food addict like me. And by the time we landed in America, I came in on TWA, that's how long ago it was, I had canker sores all through my mouth. because I had eaten so much pineapple. Now, I can't remember how I got it on the plane. The rules weren't, I don't even know if I cut them up, if I have no idea, but I just know that my mouth was full of canker sores. So I know that I ate more than probably two or three pineapples. I came here, that diet didn't last for very long, and up and down I went like a yo-yo, nonstop. And I couldn't, I would say the most I ever kept my weight off for was a month, but I was white knuckling it all the way through, because once I got to the event, the party, had the date, whatever it was, there came the diuretics, there came all the methods, which the big book tells me have to fail me completely. Utterly, I have to be utterly defeated. And it tells me in the AA 12 and 12 that nobody likes to admit complete defeat. I certainly don't. And I don't want to hear you tell me, okay, maybe I'm powerless over a couple of things, but unmanageable. I was so insulted. I was so righteous about it. So I came in and out of these rooms for a long, long time. You can figure out the years from 1982. Never ever saw the woman again who took me to a meeting, always remembered her name. I don't know if this was is true or not, but I feel like God planted me here in Los Angeles. Number one, I had a place to come, and I'm not a backpacking kind of girl to come to America on her own. And you can't really backpack to a Four Seasons. So I was had somewhere to come and live. I came, my life took off. Great career, was able to buy a home, did all my legalities, everything was great. So I couldn't, thank you. I couldn't stop getting, thank you very much, Karen. I couldn't stop getting drunk on food. And I was always flabbergasted. I went on a diet to lose this, and then I gained this, and it's more than this. And then I would start to bribe myself. I'll never weigh more than this. I'll never do this. And I never forget this. It's so funny how the things that stick with you, and I do happen to have a good memory. I can remember thinking on the day I weighed 198, this is getting really dodgy here. We got to be really careful, because can you imagine weighing more than 200 pounds? And when I weighed again, I weighed 203. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, permanent, progressive, fatal. And that progression is really aggressive. You know, all the things that you think that you won't do with food. I have a friend here who always says, I ate in a very disturbing manner. I never thought I'd go into your house and help clean up and then go into your dustbin and take things out. But I've done them. And if you are new on OA.org, they have 15 questions. And they ask you some pretty profound things. I have it up. And do I eat until I'm suffering? You know, so I'm so stuffed. Do I have feelings of guilt, shame, or embarrassment about my weight or the way I eat? Yes. Do my eating behaviors make me or others unhappy? Absolutely. This is a family affair. It affected my whole family. Have you ever used laxatives? Yes. Vomiting? No. I still cry if I throw up. Diuretics? Yes. Excessive exercise? Absolutely. Diet pills? Yes. Shots? Yes. Medical interventions, including surgery? I did look into surgery. And I do believe, for me personally, that God launched another search and rescue. And my surgery was not approved by the medical insurance, because on that day, I weighed 2 pounds less than the recommended top of the scale of what you should weigh for my height. Do I fantasize about how much better life would be if I were a different size or weight? Have I ever eaten food that is burnt, frozen, or spoiled? Yes. From containers in the grocery store? Yes. Or out of the garbage? And here's one of them that's really, as you start to go through the book, are there certain foods I can't stop eating after having the first bite? And once I got to work here, I learned, first of all, that there's nothing, I'm not stupid, I'm not this or I'm not that, when everybody would ask me. The Dr. Silkworth, who's just shed so much light on addiction, says, he made a statement, and it confirms that we have suffered alcoholic torture. And I do believe I tortured myself mentally, physically, and spiritually. must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite abnormal as his mind. And when does my mind become abnormal? When I ingest certain foods. And it tells us, and if you have a big book and want to carry it, follow along, and you don't have to, XXVIII, in the doctor's opinion, the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics, and I wasn't just a girl who just had a nosh every now and again at a party. Once I started, I couldn't stop. Licking the plate, wiping my fingers, going out and getting more, and certain foods create this allergy. And it says that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never use alcohol, and I have the items next to mine written, in any form at all. So I am somebody who believes in entire abstinence because, again, for me, I would never go into an open AA meeting and hear somebody say, cheers to you, I just had a sip, but I'm technically okay, because that wasn't really my brand or something else. In order for me personally to connect with the God of my understanding, to be available for everybody in my life, I can be recovered 24 hours at a time and be entirely abstinent. I have an abstinence that works for me, not for Michelle, not for Karen, not for Lewis, not for Leslie. They all have their own stuff going on. Those foods that create that allergy in them don't necessarily create it in me. So I have my abstinence and I have a food plan. And again, I'm sober and I would know if I wasn't. And I just have the yes and the no. There is no in between. As a good friend of mine in the UK always says, can't be an amber gambler. You know, just when that light's changing, let me just floor it. Let me just floor it. One of my friends here who drives me a lot, he knows I tend to just push things a little bit too much when I'm driving. Just go, right? That's the way. Drive around the wrong way to get the parking space. It definitely worked yesterday. Got spots under trees for us. But again, that's that personality that I will push things. And it says, once, you know, I can't do it. Once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. And there's the unmanageability, two parts to step one. It's quite obvious to look at me at 250 pounds that something was going on. And believe me, I had my thyroid checked every single doctor in this town. I would go everywhere. I'm surprised my insurance didn't cover me. I mean, not cover me. And then here's the thing. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. So I learn here, it isn't about the car. It's not about, you know, the hunky guy asking me out, the big weddings, the big diamond rings, whatever your fantasy is. I always say I'm a Disney princess. Because what needs to happen here, and if you are new and I sound like I'm talking Chinese, don't worry about it. I didn't understand any of it in the beginning. Whoever takes your hand and guides you through will explain everything. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. So I come to meetings to identify with all of you, to be there for the newcomer, to see where I am today, and most importantly, as a reminder, when people do come back from relapse, where I haven't been yet. Because nobody comes back ready to do Sports Illustrated and says to me, Susan, I found the Golden Beach. This is where we're moving to. It's all going to be okay. Time after time after time, repeatedly, they come back and say, so glad you're here. It took everything in me to come back. Because our minds and our egos are so, so powerful. So what has to happen, it says that this insanity will be repeated over and over and over, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, a spiritual awakening. There is very little hope of their recovery. And this isn't always easy. It says, simple, not easy, a price had to be paid. And the price is really, you know, I had to give up my subscription to the Know It All Club. Well, excuse me, but, and I'm so sorry, but, and if you would just hear this, and if you would just hear that, and then I start listening to all of your stories, and they're just the same. Everybody has something, but all these people who had what I wanted weren't killing themselves with food anymore, and they were working these 12 steps a day at a time because their lives did depend on them, and they were helping other people. They were helping other people do likewise. And that's the gift here, that we get to give this away, because we are uniquely qualified to do so, which it talks about in the chapter, Working with Others. It also says that there isn't a brighter spot. I've always been very Susie social my whole life. I never knew that I had so much room in my life and in my heart for all the incredible friends that I have today. I am so blessed. And believe me, it doesn't look like I thought it would, being in a normal size body. But I will tell you, it is pretty damn good. But I'm also very, very clear that it's contingent on me doing several things every single day. And before I start my day, you know, I talk to God. The alarm goes off. I have a chat with God. We get up, we make a cup of tea, and I get into the spiritual gymnasium. I'm not someone who wakes up grumpy or anything, but I still need to get right with God every single morning. And there's even something that I can read in the mornings when I do that. And I will say, because I don't want to jump ahead, you know, I work these steps as outlined. I didn't take a little bit of this, didn't take a little bit of that. I did them all. Step one, powerless, unmanageable. Came to believe. Now, I didn't not believe, but I just thought that God worked on Sunday nights.
10 minutes.
Thank you, because Sunday night is a big night when you're going to work and dressing the way I used to have to pre-pandemic, because that's the, oh, you know what? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm begging and crying. But my memory fails to keep me in check. And by Monday morning, I would get up and be off again. Just the tiniest little disturbance, just the tiniest little disturbance. And now, you know, when I get up in the morning, this is on 86, if you're new, we consider our plans for the day. But before I even begin doing that, I ask God to direct my thinking, that be divorced from self-pity, oh golly gosh, certainly lived in that world, dishonest, it's not really a lie, I just, you know, just not quite sure, so I'm not quite sure I'm going to tell the whole story, radical honesty, but going through it with grace, not bulldozing into your house and telling you all kinds of things that you don't need to hear about you, that is not my job, even when I make amends. My amends are for my part in situations. And if you come back at me, I have to sit there quietly and take it. Luckily, that hasn't been the situation, but that's also because we guide each other of how to do that so that we don't injure others. So it says that if I start to do these things, I can employ my mental faculties for assurance, for after all, God gave me brains to use. And it also tells me, you know, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So this takes time. So like if I go and pick up or try to pick up a 25-pound weight right now and do a bicep curl, ain't going to work. I know which weights work for me. And I also know some days, you know, I can do a little bit more. It ebbs and flows, but I can never go straight down again. So, you know, I try and look up everywhere in my life. Where did God show up for me today? You know, one of my other friends always says, you know, how was I to live with today? Of course, I think I was perfect to live with. But you know what? Not always. We step on the toes of our fellows and those around us. But now when I behave like a schmo, I fix it as quickly as I can. And if it's really a situation that I've gotten my feathers very ruffled about, I make a call. I do writing. I just had to do an inventory on something that really, really ruffled my feathers. My sponsor was away in Europe, but guess what? Because I have this fellowship and I have dug my heels in deep, I have people who will take my inventory from me, people who will be radically honest with me, not mean and nasty, but they'll be there with me and they'll say, okay, this is what's going on. You know, the last couple of days, we have these different daily readers if you're new. And I happen to like the 24-hour day book. And yesterday and today was very, I just really liked it. It said there are 2 days in every week about which we should not worry. 2 days that should be kept from fear and apprehension. One of these days is yesterday, with its mistakes and cares, its faults and blunders, its aches and pains. Yesterday has passed forever beyond our control. All the money in the world cannot bring back yesterday. We cannot undo a single act we performed. We cannot erase a single word we said. Yesterday is gone beyond recall. Do I still worry about what happened yesterday? I clean up my stuff every day. I write a nightly review. And the first question is, when we constructively review our day, you know, what resentments do we have? Were we selfish? It runs you all through it. And then, because I want to talk about step 12, today's was the other day we should not worry about. Bet you can all guess the million-dollar answer. Tomorrow, with its possible adversities, its burdens, its large promise, and perhaps its poor performance. Tomorrow is also beyond our immediate control. Tomorrow, sun will rise, either in splendor or behind a mask of clouds, depending on where you're living, but it will rise. Until it does, we have no stake in tomorrow, for it is as yet unborn. Do I still worry too much about tomorrow? I used to, and today I really live right here and enjoy my full 24 hours a day, and that is a total gift. So from the very beginning of the book, it tells us about helping each other. And, you know, can't be giving what you don't have. So once you're ready, you know, you open up these pages to a chapter called Working with Others, and you start to carry this message to other people. You know, all of us being here tonight are carrying it to each other. And hopefully there'll be lots of time for everybody to share. And one of the greatest things that it says in here is that practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity, so I'm going to be kept safe and protected from drinking, eating, vomiting, starving, as intensive work with other alcoholics. So intensive. So it's not just, oh, I'll see you around, call me once a week. That, in my experience, doesn't work. So it is intensive. I get up pretty early in the morning, because sometimes my first call is at 6 a.m. So I'm not waking up at 10 to 6 because I'm participating in that call, because I'm also growing during those calls, hearing from my sponsees. And it says, carry this message to alcoholics, this message of hope, of love, of correct information. There's a lot of information. Sometimes I hear people say, I'm not quite sure what page that is on, but it sounds like someone has given you an opinion. There are suggestions. There are musts, 72 of them in the book. And I know from my experience, as it says on page 88, it works, it really does. Because a girl like me at this point in her life would weigh 600 pounds. There is no way that I could stay stopped because I choose to put my food on a food scale. Absolutely not. Because I'd be lying and cheating. What's supposed to be 4 would probably be 15 because it's just this, it's just that. It just doesn't matter. Today, it does really matter to me. Nobody has said anything rude to me about my weight in nearly 24 years. I haven't had to ask for a seatbelt extender. My thighs haven't rubbed together in the summer and bled for 24 years. I don't get rashes in all kinds of unmentionable places in mixed meetings, but for those men who are obese too, they have them.
3 minutes.
Thank you. I have relationships today in my life that are second to none, including in my family, which is remarkable. One of my sisters walks this path with me. She's in this program and somewhere else. And she had one of my friends give her a candle today and might even tell me it was her OA birthday, I mean to say. But guess where I was this morning? On the beach with my two little godchildren. Thank God I didn't have to strip all the way down. So I'm just saying it was freaking freezing. However, we were running in doing, and it was so cold and so yucky, but I did it anyway. And then we went home and then we went into the swimming pool and I did it anyway. Because I'm very Snow White, so that's mainly the reason for not doing it. But there is no greater joy of that freedom and that complete abandon of when somebody loves you so wholeheartedly like a child, because they don't see anything about you other than just having fun. And that's what I get to do today. I have so much fun. I give a lot of service in Overeaters Anonymous because I can never give back what's so graciously been given to me. And I've had the experience of being able to thank that person who took me to that first meeting way back in 1982. It's a whole crossroads of freeways and motorways crossing over, a long story, and I know my time is nearly up. But she's still in the rooms. I got to see her again in person at the OA birthday party in January. So tonight, you know, a few people here have identified as new. I know I'm going to be scrolling the chat for their numbers, and I hope that one syllable I have said will help them. And if it doesn't, there are so many more of you here to hear from tonight. So again, Jessica, thank you so much. Thank you to the Ontario Intergroup. It's lovely to meet those of you who I don't know. And thank you to my friends who came and continue trudging with me. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Finish your thought and wrap.